everybody. If you could hear the sound of my voice and all this stuff works right, we're about to embark on an adventure together, an adventure called Dave Wilson's Part of Radio Liberty. Dr. Stanley Monteith is away from the microphone for a couple of more days, and he's asked me to sit in here for him, and I hope that I'll be able to do that. Those are awfully big shoes. Keep him in your prayers for protection and provision, doing what he needs to do right now. And keep me in your prayers, too, as we continue along with doing special editions of Radio Liberty throughout this week. You know, it's been my very great pleasure to be here, but I do have to remind you that the views expressed on this live radio program are not necessarily the views of the station you might be listening to, or the internet connector you might be listening to, or any of that other stuff. You know the drill. They're my views. They're the views of my guest, of course, and they could be your views as well as you give us a call. Let me give you the numbers right now so that we can call each other, or you can call me. I guess that'd be easier, wouldn't it? Anyway, locally here in the Monterey Bay area, any place in the 831 area code, it's 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Anywhere. Actually, you can hear the sound of our voice. I'll drop the 50 cents for you at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. 888-245-4237. My guest today is Richard Aubaines. Now, Richard is an author of a novel today. And you say, what, Dave, you're talking about a novel? I can't believe that. You've really slipped over. Well, no, just give me a chance. Richard, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Now, I got to explain just a little bit that I didn't know it was a novel when I called up Harvest House. Your novel, Homeland Insecurity, however, has piqued my interest because I don't think anybody ever did a novel just like this one that you and your wife have written, Homeland Security by Harvest House Publishers, ladies and gentlemen. I'd recommend that you perhaps Google it or go to Amazon or your local Christian bookstore to pick up a copy, because it's a fascinating read and will open your mind about things that perhaps we in Christendom and just citizens of these United States don't think about, because so much now is being taken over by the war on terrorism that seems to be fundamentally Islam. Pascal was quoted in your book, Richard, as saying, men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from religious conviction. And your book is all about domestic terrorism, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's the kind of terrorism that I believe so many people, too many people, are actually overlooking. As you so rightly said, we're so focused now on the Muslim terrorists and the radical Islam and all of this, that we're forgetting we have had and continue to have in our country fellow Americans who are terrorists, and they are using an extremist, perverted form of Christianity to justify their terrorism, their hate, their violence, and their end goal is very much very similar to the Muslim extremists. They want to bring down the U.S. government.
Yeah, that's really scary, because every now and again, you will hear someone say, I forget who it was that said it, someone prominent, that American Christian fundamentalism is just as bad as Islamic fundamentalism. And I thought that was a pretty weird thing for a citizen of these United States to say.
Well, yes, it is. And, you know, the difficulty in this day and age is that there are so many terms flying around back and forth that a lot of them are going undefined now. You know, so when you say fundamentalist to one person, it doesn't mean the same thing as when you say fundamentalist to another person. When you say Christianity to one person, it doesn't mean what another person thinks of Christianity. So, you know, we really have to define our terms when we're talking about these very emotional and heated issues. And I, of course, am talking about the white supremacist, racist, neo-Nazi skinheads, Klanners in this country.
Right. Let me just interrupt you to welcome our local guest now here from the Monterey Bay. We've just come on the air with our local KKMC friends. And welcome aboard, all you people who are listening to Radio Liberty. I'm Dave Wilson, once again, sitting in here for Dr. Stan. Thank you so much for joining us. We're talking with Richard Aubaines today. He has written a book called Homeland Insecurity, and we're talking about the fact that there are people here in these United States who are terrorists, but they're not Islam. They're not some kind of other religion. They would even consider themselves to be Christian. And people are beginning to notice that, and of course the terms are the things that are getting all mixed up. Let me remind those of you who just joined us that the views expressed here are not the views of the station you're listening to. They're my views. They're the views of my guests, and they can be your views as you join us on this talk radio program at 464-8295 and area code 831, 464-8295, 888-24-LIBERTY. 888-245-4237 is the number to call if you'd care to join us later on. As we're talking to Richard Abanes about homeland insecurity, we were just kind of defining some terms, and Richard, you began to talk a little bit about skinheads and neo-Nazis and stuff like that, so I'm sorry to have had to interrupt you, but just to expound on that just a little bit more.
Oh, sure. You know, as we were talking about, there are terrorists in this country, individuals that we're overlooking, and those are the neo-Nazis, the skinheads, the white supremacists, the racists, members of the Ku Klux Klan. These people have embraced, many of them, not all of them, but many of them have embraced a sort of pseudo-Christianity, a perversion of Christianity called Christian identity that places the white race above all other races. Hmm. And it is a religion of hate, a religion of ignorance, one that is filled with a desire to not only destroy people of color, but bring down the United States government, and also to destroy people of Jewish descent. It's a very Hitlerian type religion. And this is what I write about it in my novel, Homeland Insecurity.
Let me just make that quote or read that quote once again that comes from your novel. I really enjoyed that part of going through the book. Every chapter heading has a fascinating quote from all kinds of different people. And so I tore out a couple of them, put them down on a piece of paper, I think we'll probably let our conversation be directed by some of these things that you've gathered from history and from current events. And the first one is, men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from religious conviction, by Pascal. Now, as I thought of that, I said to myself, goodness gracious, that is absolutely the clearest definition, if you will, of what seems to be going on now. Because otherwise, how in the world can we justify or even understand how many murders have been committed in the name of God? And if we look at the Islamic thing that's going on there, they actually believe if they murder, they'll go to heaven in a better kind of way. But there are people here in these United States who not only want to murder, kill, but they want to throw down our style of government.
That's right, and it's a tragedy, and it's something that, again, I've had many people read the book and say, I had no idea that these individuals were even in this country and believed these things, especially in the name of Christianity. It's a tragedy.
Well, now, are you a pastor down there at Saddleback, or are you just leading the worship team every now and again? I know you have an association with it. In fact, a rather controversial association, or not association, but a controversial stand down there, having read your Wikipedia thing this afternoon. I think you're the first person I've ever read that said, this may be a slanted view or something. Congratulations on that.
Well, yeah, you know, I've written nearly 20 books covering issues such as apologetics, the occult, cults, world religions, and so I usually deal with very controversial issues. I was on staff at Saddleback Church as one of the on the music staff, and as also as one of the licensed ministers there. But I felt like the Lord wanted me to do some more writing, so I left staff there in about 2000, and I've been writing ever since.
Well, you've come up with books that are certainly needed in Christendom, I suspect. You're not afraid to talk about Harry Potter. You're not afraid to talk about the Da Vinci Code, the LDS Church, and stuff like that. And really, as we tend to move away from some Bible teaching and so forth in churches today, or in Sunday school anyway, people depend more and more upon clear thinkers like yourself to understand what's really going on. I mean, the whole field of apologetics seems to change itself almost every two or three years because something new comes up or a new slant on something comes up, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And it's really important for Christians to stay on top of things. And one of the things I've been trying to do most recently is to catch those issues that are related to pop culture, mm-hmm. really cutting-edge issues, even such as topics related to video games, issues regarding my own church, Saddleback Church, Pastor Rick Warren, his book, Purpose-Driven Life. And so I'm trying to impart good information to people, accurate information that's documented about all these things so that they can, you know, take this stuff to God and say, how do I feel about this? What is the truth here on some of these very controversial and confusing issues?
Your one book, What Every Parent Needs to Know About Video Games, is published by Harvest House. Also, you can check that out, ladies and gentlemen. I think one of the strangest phenomena of this 21st century is the pervasive influence of video games on our culture. We're getting our children to be uncannily good at technical things. And the only reason I say that is that my kids, now they're in their 40s, they gave me a PlayStation Portable for my birthday last year.
Good for you.
Well, I asked for it.
Uh-huh.
And I talked them out. They wanted to give me an iTouch. And I said, no, I want to wait for the second or third generation of that thing to come out before I get one. So I said, I'd really like a PSP. And so I was fooling around with it one day. My five-year-old grandson comes up, and he looks over my shoulder, and he said something, well, are you having a tough time, Poppy, getting into this level of this Star Wars Lego game, which I have, you know? So I handed it over to my five-year-old, and, of course, you know what happened. There he goes.
Zipped right through
it. Yeah, he knows how to do it, absolutely. He knows what happens when the thing hangs up. He says, well, you just take this on-off switch and you hold it in this position for a long time until the screen changes, and then it's, you know, 5 years old.
Uh-huh.
When I was 5 years old, I was being run around by gophers being frightened off my tricycle and stuff.
Yeah,
like
I was
that.
Making mud pies in the alley, you know.
So anyway, we're going to have to deal with his mindset when he becomes 20, and God forbid he hasn't received the Lord Jesus Christ by that time. He's going to be inundated with all kinds of technical things that will sway him over to believing that if this works so well, it might be right. But that's the case in many of the cult and occult things, isn't it, as people view it?
It is. And, you know, that's why we as Christians, we need to get good, balanced information. And I'm really one to not want to go to extremes, you know. One extreme is this utter, total permissivist. Read anything you want, do anything you want, play anything you want, watch anything you want. But then the other side of that is don't do anything.
Right.
Be afraid of everything. Oh, all video games are bad. You know, all movies are bad. All kinds of music that aren't church music is bad. And we as Christians, you know, God told us to love him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. So, you know, we can think about these things, and there are many things in society we can embrace and use as tools for spreading the gospel, even dealing with, you know, controversial aspects like, you know, all this racism or video games or the Da Vinci Code.
Exactly. I personally didn't care for the way that the Da Vinci Code was presented, and I did not see it. I did do a lot of apologetic work with the next generation down from me, that is my children and my nieces and nephews, who were enthralled with not only the book but the movie when it came out, and I gave them some different kinds of DVDs that had come out from various and sundry ministries pointing to the biblical fallacies that were in that book. And your book, The Truth Behind the Da Vinci Code, I'm sure has seen some success because of that movie as well, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my book on the Da Vinci Code went through, I don't know how many printings, sold maybe 150,000 copies, and was really a great tool, not just for Christians, but also unbelievers. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's the thrust of my ministry. I actually love unbelievers. I have unbeliever friends. I play video games with unbelievers. I talk to them a lot because, you know, we as Christians can't isolate ourselves, or guess what? Nobody's getting the Word of God. Nobody's having their lives touched. So when I write my books now, what I try to do, including this novel, is to write it in such a way where you could take it and you could actually give it to an unbeliever friend and say, read this book, it's a great book, and there's spiritual Christian truths in there, but it's, you know, people who don't know Christ aren't getting hit over the head with the Bible.
Yeah, we really need to have that mindset as we try to live the Christ-like life. And so many of us feel that we have to win this thing. If people don't convert to Christianity after we've given them our spiel or something, then we have some sort of sense of loss in this country anyway. There's a competition involved almost with evangelism. And that's a sad thing because it's truly your lifestyle, I suspect, at least in my life. I believe this. It's my lifestyle that's observed, and my words are observed, and my evangelistic thrusts on occasion with people one-on-one sometimes have good results and sometimes not. Eleanor Roosevelt wrote, again coming out of your book, "When will our consciences grow so tender that we will act to prevent human misery rather than avenge it?" And that seems to kind of be an underlying thread of what you've written in your book, Homeland Security. All of these groups, don't they, Richard, come together because of hatred?
Yes. They are very much motivated by two things, hatred and ignorance. You will find that behind so much violence in this world. And, you know, I deal with one of the things in Homeland Security that I deal with are all these issues involving more than just, you know, racism and hatred and violence and white supremacy, but the underlying causes, issues such as forgiveness, repentance, recognition of sin, loyalty, bravery, how we view life and life after death,
mm-hmm.
all these things can actually be springboards for what I hope to be Bible studies in churches all around the country using Homeland Insecurity to kind of talk about these issues.
Well, what was it that made a person such as yourself who has had pastoral experience and a lot of experience in the world, if I may put it that way, having been on stage and radio and television in your earlier years, what led you to begin to think about this kind of a book? Was it something that struck you one day? Were you face to face with this kind of terror in your own life?
Well, you know, I started thinking about this story way back in the 90s when we were having the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, when uh-huh. that happened, and all of the militia groups that were forming around that time. There was beginning then a real surge in white supremacy in this country. And that was the first time I actually took a look at all of these issues. And I actually did an award-winning book called American Militias, Rebellion, Racism, and Religion. And I went to be a speaker. I was invited to be a speaker at the Simon Wiesenthal Center. I went to their Tolerance, Museum of Tolerance there, the Holocaust Museum. And it moved me, and it hurt me so much that I started thinking about all of these issues and hatred and violence and ignorance, white supremacy. And over the years, this story in my head sort of formed, and wanting to tell people, look, we have a danger in this country, a real danger that we as Christians need to be aware of, so that if something were to happen the way I describe it in my book, which is a very real possibility, we'll have the truth and we'll know how to deal with these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how it came to be.
So how did you go about investigating something like this? Just go to newspaper archives and so forth?
Well, I spent quite some time gathering from points all over the country actual racist materials, their pamphlets, their books, their tapes, their propaganda, and pouring through them for quite some time. I have a whole file drawer full of material from the Aryan Nations, from other white supremacist groups. And I studied that, and I actually attended some meetings of militias in the country to try to get a feel for how they were viewing the government. And then, more recently, with the advent of the Internet, which is the number one propagation tool being used now by these uh-huh. groups, I was able to do a lot of research.
We're going to be coming back to our interview. Excuse me for interrupting
sure.
At this point in time. We're going to lose a couple stations, going to gain a couple stations. Things are going to be mixed up for a minute or two. But, ladies and gentlemen, please, please don't go away. We want to get the truth out, and our guest this afternoon, Richard Avanes, we'll be talking more about Homeland Insecurity. And Richard, I appreciate your coming on here. Now, you live down in Orange County, and we're talking briefly about your way of your methodology, really, of researching. Did you find Any of these groups down in Orange County? I mean, the bastion of John Wayne and the Republican Party and so forth?
Well, actually, there's quite a stronghold of white supremacists in California, a surprising amount, especially in the high desert around Bakersfield area and even in the San Diego, Orange County area. They are here, and this is one of the things we're not recognizing, is these people live right next door to us. Often we don't see it, but I will be, for example, going around in Orange County, and I'll see little symbols on guys' T-shirts. I will see tattoos on some young men, and I know what these signs and tattoos mean, and they are marks for white supremacy, for racism, for references to Hitler. They're coded, and so it's everywhere, and nobody's recognizing it, nobody's seeing it, because we're paying so much attention to the Muslim terrorists. And the people who follow Islam, radical Islam.
Can you give us a description of some of these things so that we might be aware of perhaps those around us?
Oh, sure. You know, for example, I mean, it's something as simple as if you see, you know, HH tattooed. That is a reference, of course, to Heil Hitler.
Hmm.
Also, if you see a pair of eights, that also stands for Hitler because it's the eighth letter of the alphabet, H.
Uh-huh.
You'll also see a skull reminiscent of death. You'll see some, perhaps, lightning bolts. These lightning bolts are references to the SS, which was, of course, Hitler's secret police in Germany in World War II. So it's all these little types of things.
You're talking a lot about things from the Nazi Party back World War II in the 30s and 40s in Europe. Is that kind of the majority opinion of these people, so to speak? You know, are they reading Mein Kampf a lot? Are they getting their strength of resolve from the things that Hitler did in terms of the Final Solution for the Jews and
Absolutely.
So forth?
Two sources, one being Hitler's writings, Hitler's teachings, his speeches, and also, sadly, tragically, the Bible. These Christian identity individuals will take the Bible, twist it and pervert it, and use it to justify their own beliefs and views. And this is really sad because, you know, they're going around, if you talk to them superficially, they will call Jesus their Lord, they believe in the Trinity, they believe in salvation by grace, all of these things. But then you start talking to them more in depth and you suddenly realize that they're saying Jews are actually the literal children of the devil. They're saying that people of color were mistakes made by God, that Adam and Eve were not the first man and woman, but that they were actually the first white man and white woman, and that America needs to be a white republic ruled by white men. I mean, it becomes very frightening.
Mm, I can see where it would be. It's strange. I just had a thought that not only are they're talking, these beliefs kind of mesh with a lot of what we know to be true about radical Islam, don't they?
Yes.
In terms of looking at the Jew?
Right. And in fact, you will find, interestingly, some crossover literature that is in the hands of radical Muslims as well as white supremacists, which is kind of odd, but it's interesting. For example, the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion,
mm-hmm.
which is a fraudulent document written just before the Russian Revolution in the early 1900s, and it purports to be this text of a secret meeting by Jewish leaders in their discussions, that covers their discussions of how to take over the world. And you will find this propagated by the white supremacists as well as the radical Muslims.
We're talking a little bit about how Islam and Nazism from the last century seem to intermesh, and there's more than one way to look at that. There, as we look at end-time scenarios, ladies and gentlemen, those of us who know Jesus Christ and who read our Bibles and go to Bible-believing, Bible-preaching churches understand that at the end of the book, we win. Jesus returns, and that's it. Right now, we're in the midst of what they call the church age. There is a rapture coming up. There is a period of tribulation coming up, and we're beginning to see more and more signs. And Richard, I believe that not only the Islamic terrorist thing coming up, because have you ever thought about how much oil Islam sits on top of? That's a fascinating thing I always think of. And, you know, why didn't God give all the oil to the Baptists or somebody? But it didn't work that way. But
yeah.
That's another program altogether. And then these people who are here in these United States who have similar belief systems regarding the Jews, how easy it's going to be for those two to at least talk to each other about their goals and ideals. They won't get along, but at least they could do that, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you subscribe to the premillennial rapture view of the church, then certainly this fits very nicely into this sort of the world against the state of Israel type scenario.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, even if you don't subscribe to that, what we see throughout history is this ongoing difficulty for the Jewish people, God's race, chosen race, God's Israelites, going all the way back to, you know, Moses and the Exodus out of Egypt.
Right.
And so it's quite amazing to see. But even the white supremacists, strangely or predictably perhaps, they have had to actually teach that the Israelites of the Old Testament were not even Jews, that they were actually Caucasians, thus the white people are God's race.
We have such a semantic battle going on in this century today that people who come out of our high schools, and Lord forgive me, can't spell, they can't make change, and they're going to get involved with a semantic battle where words don't even mean words anymore. You know, what is the meaning of is? It started by that part of things.
Right, right. And we also live in an age of real, you know, this type of relativism where almost
right.
There is no right or wrong, and so kids are losing their way.
Your right is right for you, and my truth is right for me.
Exactly.
That's scary when you see it manifested now, kind of superficially in a lot of things, although it is in a lot of colleges and being taught relativism. But when these people get into the political realm positions of leadership, which they will because we're going to die, or at least I am, you know, sooner or later, it's going to be scary because our country is a republic based on law. And even now, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, are not being read as if they were law, but a living, growing organism which needs to be changed as the words change. That's pretty scary to me, frankly.
Right. You know, where is the country going? Where are our youth going? And this is something I found that was very interesting and disturbing at the same time. The place where people like white supremacists are getting their most converts are from high school and early college.
Wow, that is scary. We're at the bottom of the hour, ladies and gentlemen. My guest is Richard Avanes. He has written a book called Homeland Insecurity. It is a novel. It is fictional, although if you were to read some of the comments on Amazon.com, it's scary fiction because it's so close to being an observation of what actually is going on. I recommend it highly. Google it out. Find it out. It's Harvest House Publishers. It's available in the usual places at your local Christian bookstore. Let me try to convince you to do something else, ladies and gentlemen, as we talk here this afternoon. Radio Liberty is on a lot of different stations, a lot of different venues even. The internet, satellite, locally here in the Monterey Bay Area live, wherever it goes, it costs money. I'd like for you to seriously consider joining the team here, if you will, and giving us a call at 800-544-8927. And ask the person that answers the phone there for complete information about Radio Liberty. And they're going to send you an information pack that has grown since the last time I did some radio here to about 50 or 60 pages with information all about the different audios, books, DVDs, so forth and so on that we make available to you so that you'll understand what's really going on in our world. And also there'll be information in there that you can pray about, maybe making a monthly donation to help underwrite the cost of putting these programs on the air. We're going to be back with Richard Avanes in just a few minutes, and don't you go away. Okay. Okay, Richard, we're thinking about the things that have led you to write a book like this. And one of the things that you said is that when you were, younger, you actually got involved with an apologetic outlook on some of this, and you had the story in your mind. What do you think is keeping most Americans from thinking about stuff like this these days?
Well, a few things. Unlike the Muslim terrorists and the radical Islamists, we don't have a lot of news coverage on the white supremacists in America, the racist Christian identity. It's sort of an underground movement almost. And so, you know, people don't do a lot of research on their own. You know, they don't even realize where to go to begin looking for some of this stuff. And so they rely on the news. And unless something really terrible happens, you don't even hear about Christian identity. One of the things that did bring it to light many years ago was, of course, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the whole Timothy McVeigh thing. But after that, it sort of faded into obscurity, especially after 9/11, and the focus was, and this is the second thing, the focus is on Muslims now. That's all we see. So I think more needs to be said. There are certain organizations. One, for example, is the Southern Poverty Law Center in Alabama, and they do a tremendous job every year of following, tracking, publishing magazines that talk about what's happening in the white supremacist movement. Morris Dees, who founded that organization, has done some great work, and I'd highly recommend that as a first-stop place to go if you want to see, you know, what's happening in that area of terrorism in the country. That's the Southern Poverty Law Center.
What is it that makes people want to identify themselves as being this kind of person? What is it that makes people want to join something like this? It strikes me that I would, you know, that's the furthest thing from my mind, wanting to be called a neo-Nazi or a skinhead or something like that.
Well, there's actually a lot of reasons. You know, there's just a lot of reasons why, for example, a person would join a cult. When it comes to white supremacists, for example, you have the children who are raised in homes of white supremacists. And just like our own children, we raise them according to our belief system. And so that's one way that people get introduced. They're raised as that. The second way is that you'll find, again, many converts to it from the high schools. We're talking youths who are directionless. They don't have good family lives. They need some guidance. And a lot of the male leaders in the white supremacist movement are very strong. They're very charismatic. They give some authority. They give direction. They give purpose and meaning to these young people today who are really kind of lost. You know,
Let's welcome everybody back aboard. We're talking with Richard Baines, who has written Homeland Insecurity. He's talking about the reasons that people get involved with white supremacists. You're listening to a special edition of Radio Liberty on this Wednesday afternoon, and my name is Dave Wilson. Richard, what say we open the phone lines up, and ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to call and talk to us about your association with white supremacist group or what you happen to think about it, we'll do that. We'll take that call, 464-8295, locally here in the Monterey Bay Area or anywhere around these United States that you hear this at 888-245-4237. So we have people standing by who would be willing to pick up that call, and we're talking about reasons people join these things. First of all, if you're raised in a home where the person, your mom or dad, are white supremacist, of course, that's a logical thing. And then more bothersome to me, you said, Richard, is converts from high school, coming out of high school with no direction and so forth. Can you expound on that a little bit more?
Sure. Well, you know, in the country today, there is obviously a breakdown in the family. Divorce rates are higher than ever before. We have a lot of latchkey kids. And so, and there's this bizarre notion these days that kids are the ones who need to be making the decisions in their lives rather than the adults making the decisions for them. So you have children basically telling the parents what to do instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
And kids need leadership. You know, their minds are not formed. It makes me crazy when I hear parents saying, "Well, I really don't want Jimmy or Johnny or Sally or Susie watching this movie or reading this book or doing this thing, but what can you do?" Well, my parents did plenty. They told me, "You can't do this." And reason are failing to understand that they can say no. And kids want that, though. I see in youth ministry, I've worked a lot in youth ministry, and kids want direction. Teenagers want to be guided and led into adulthood as they're growing. And so many of these leaders in the white supremacist movement, especially men, are strong, they're charismatic, they give direction, they give purpose and meaning to these kids, and so it gravitates toward them.
Would you even say that they're father figures to them?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I was just watching the other month a special on one particular white supremacist group, and all of the young men in there looked to this male leader absolutely as a father figure. Absolutely. And it's very powerful for them, you know. Also, you have people getting involved simply because maybe they've had bad experiences, for example, with some particular ethnic individual, and because they've gotten so upset by it, they have focused their hatred on that entire race rather than on just the one person. And that's just ignorance, and they need to be educated. They need to be shown that all people aren't like that person or those people that you met.
Right. And we all meet people like that. I mean,
yes.
Practically on a daily basis, if you're out in the world doing business with someone or whatever, you're always going to meet people who, for whatever reason, are not just like you, and there's going to be conflict, and you can let it go as far as you want, or you can just try to be a person who is not confrontational. Knowing what's right, you need to stand up for that. But you don't need to go off the deep end. There's a Chinese proverb you quoted in your book, Homeland Insecurity. Hatred always corrodes the vessel in which it's stored. We see that a lot, don't we? I mean, it's even been depicted on television in places like Law and Order and so forth. The just ununderstandable, I don't know, is that a word?
Beyond, it is now.
Beyond comprehension, why do people hate so deeply? You know, it's hard to understand. What do you think?
You know, I think sometimes it's actually a defense. I found that a lot of the people who hate the most are the same people who hurt the most.
Mm-hmm.
They have been scarred in some way, either, you know, by family members or friends or people who they thought were their friends or society in general. And there's this thing that happens called scapegoating, where in order for the mind to protect itself and to make some sense out of the terrible and horrible things that have happened to them in life, they need to blame someone, especially when there seems to be no one to blame. And oftentimes this falls on those who are not like us. So if you're white, it's going to be blaming someone who's black. If you're African-American, it might be blaming someone who's white. Racism goes both ways.
Yes, it does. It was interesting to note that on CBS's 60 Minutes last Sunday, they had a segment on how some of these people who seem to have been raised without ever having heard the word no to them are now entering the workforce. Did you see that segment by
chance? Yes, I did. This new generation of workers, quote-unquote.
That was really strange to me, and I can see after having talked to you and read portions of your book and have a better understanding now of how someone like that who would be just encouraged and encouraged and encouraged all the time could be easily led astray, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, we're seeing a different kind of generation emerge from their teenage years into their early 20s, and now, as you say, they're moving into the workplace, and they're going to be moving into politics, and I don't know what that's going to mean for our country when these types of individuals get into a position of power. I think we have some really rough times ahead of us as a nation.
Can they really be successful with the attitudes that were shown on that television program?
You know, I think if we have to define, you know, we've been talking about definition of terms, and we have to define the term success and what does success mean. And I think many of these individuals will, once they truly begin outnumbering others, will start beginning to take some very interesting roles in the power establishment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that's going to mean, though.
It seems to me that the identity of this country is going to change quite a bit. We're not going to be able to stand up against those to whom we know bring us destruction. You know, we've already seen that to some degree, and some of the political shouting that's going on about the war in Iraq, whether your opinion, whether that's good or bad, is irrelevant to this discussion. But, you know, we really need to understand that we do have to defend this country, ladies and gentlemen. There was another segment on television someplace, I don't remember where it was, but they were interviewing young people coming out of high school, asking them whether they felt any kind of a responsibility to join the military. And they said, no, what's in it for me? And that's scary, don't you think?
Yeah, it is, because that's the wrong question to ask. The right question is, first, you know, is there a legitimate reason, a legitimate war for me to join, mm-hmm. that I need to protect this country? And again, as you said, that's a whole debate in and of itself, you know, what we're doing in Iraq, whether
right.
it is justified. But it doesn't take a lot to know that to ask the question, what is in it for me, is not the right question under any circumstance.
I used to like to ask, when I was on this question or on this program, some people would come on and I'd say, what are you willing to die for in your life? And I was always surprised that many people were dumbfounded. Myself, being a military veteran, having seen combat and so forth and so on, having gotten shot up but never shot down, I always like to say, thank God, I found things in my early days that I was willing to die for, because I did join the military. I was, I don't want to say enjoying the experience, but I look back on those 10 or so years as the best years of my life in many ways for having experienced esprit de corps, camaraderie, complete fear, the dry heaves, for that matter, and all that sort of thing. And that molded me into the person that I am today. And I think probably we've cocooned our youth today so much that they haven't experienced a lot of the kinds of things that I did growing up. Of course, my parents raised me during World War II, and we saw that kind of a worldwide thing going on there. It's important for us to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that this nation is worth dying for, whether you believe it's going to be going on the straight path with the current administration, the next administration. It's the concept that our founding fathers established in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the fact that we're a republic that's worth dying for. And to die for it, maybe it just means that you need to get out and talk to people about it. You need to educate yourself about it. There are all kinds of things that you need to do because the responsibility is upon your shoulders. But, Richard, how do these people expect to get anywhere, these white supremacists, these people who are coming out of high school, these guys who are leading these young people around? What are they going to do? Are they going to rise up and take over Buena Park or something like that someday?
Well, you know, that's what my book is about. I basically thought to myself, what if all of these individuals finally got a leader, a single leader who would unify them? And truth be told, that's all they're really missing right now. These white supremacists around the country, they're on all these little factions and groups and cells, and they're all disconnected. They all, you know, go in their own way. But what would happen if there was one individual who actually had the smarts to come together and pull them together and come up with some of these things that I talk about in the book,
uh-huh.
those places in our country that are vulnerable to attacks? What would happen if they actually tried to bring down the U.S. government? And, of course, my big character, Frank Delafield, who is an investigative journalist, he sort of gets on the trail of this and he sees what happens.
So your novel really is relevant to people who are thinking people these days. It's not just a thrill ride through several hundred pages of this and that and the other, but it's actually a learning experience, and you've worked hard to reveal some truths that people aren't talking about.
Oh, absolutely. I have woven into this fictional tale facts, history, true beliefs of these people, concepts, ideas, even some historical data from fairly recent times about, for example, the fact that many white supremacists have actually infiltrated the military and have access to high-grade weapons.
Mm-hmm.
These types of things nobody's talking about, and so I wanted to really bring out truth mixed with fiction.
This may be a dumb question, but how come people don't notice stuff like that is going on? What, I mean, in terms of the military, if the military has a white supremacist group for people who are having identifying marks on them or whatever, doesn't our security system, our way of determining your security clearance and so forth still work?
Well, you know, that's a really, really good question, and I don't know the answer to it. In fact, I just saw a report on the news the other night that the government has relaxed yet even more the guidelines for taking in soldiers and now are allowing men to join the Army who have minor felonies. It seems that the Army is really kind of turning into nothing more than a mercenary force. And, again, this is very disturbing. These are some very disturbing concepts.
Do you think there's any underlining conspiratorial nature, other than the biblical line, we win at the end, that's going on, that's infiltrated the republic here in these United States?
I believe in one conspiracy that sadly, has absolutely taken over the United States. The United States government, the United States business world, and that is the conspiracy of greed.
Mm-hmm.
I have looked around at this country that I love with all my heart. My father served in the Navy for 20 years. My uncle served in the Navy for 20 years. I come from a military family, and it saddens me and it breaks my heart to see what I believe has taken over this country, and it's greed. From corporate America, you know, running the show on so many things, to some very bizarre legislation and things happening with regard to foreign policy. And I don't know how or why it's happening, except for the fact that man is sinful, and or where it's going to go. You know, I hope, and I'll be very frank with you here, I hope America is still here 200 years from now.
Everything seems to be bottom line dollars. We can see that. And if you look at the world through that grid, you can see strings and so forth, or points of light, or whatever you want to use, that make it all seem very logical. The way our dollar, frankly, now is not worth anything or growing so, because we don't have a money that's based in any kind of thing that's worthwhile. The unconstitutional Federal Reserve and all these different things makes corporate America have to work even harder to get dollars. And corporate America, in my opinion, I imagine in yours, Richard, doesn't really seem to have any morality in it except for the dollar.
Right. You know, when I hear now almost nightly about some car being released that they knew was unsafe, or some drug being released that they knew was unsafe, or some food additive being released that they knew was unsafe, it seems that no one is caring about anyone anymore. I don't know how these people sleep at night, and we have become a nation of the greedy.
What can we do about it? You and I are Christian people. We've both been in the pastoral ministry at one point in our life. Do you see the church as having an important role in this battle that we're waging?
Well, absolutely I do, but maybe not on such a huge, broad level. I don't think this church will, our church, will ever be able to save the world and make it a paradise, or save America and make it a grand country. But what we can do is save lives,
mm-hmm.
one soul at a time. And that is the Christian purpose. That is the ministry. That's how we're going to make a difference. I can't, you know, I'm never going to be in politics. I'm never going to probably help pass legislation. But what I can do is tell the guy next to me that I'm at the mechanic shop with about Christ. It's I can go to the store and be kind to one person, hold the door open, say God bless you as I'm walking out the store. I can invite people to church. This is how Christians are to impact the world. You know, Jesus said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Render unto God the things that are God's. That's where we are supposed to live.
It's interesting that Voltaire was quoted in your book as well, and he said there are some that only employ words for the purpose of disguising their thoughts. But we as Christian people who employ words that are out of God's Word, the Bible, have a passion for reaching men's souls. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about that as we continue our discussion with Richard Avanes. He's the author of Homeland Insecurity. It's published by Harvest House Publishers. It's available at Amazon and your Christian bookstore. You have a website, www.abanes.com. Is that correct, Richard?
That's correct.
Okay, www.abanes.com. You can go there, and I'm sure there's information where you can find out more about what Richard has done, is doing, and maybe will do, as he has written one exciting book. I'm sure it's whetted your appetite, Richard, to make even a few more. I don't know. I'm anxious to read the book. Typically, I read the book before I do an interview, but today I got caught with UPS or whatever that all goes on with. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back with Richard as we close this hour out in just a few minutes. So don't you dare go away. And those phone lines, they're open. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to give us a call at 464-8295 or 888-24-LIBERTY, 888-245-4237. We'd love to receive your call. If you had something you'd like to talk to Richard or me about, we'd love to hear you. How about this, though? Call 800-544-8927 and ask for a copy of the Radio Liberty Resource List. 60-some-odd pages now, 64 pages. All the information you could ever ask for to understand about what's going on here at Radio Liberty, both the audio tapes, the CDs and so forth, DVDs, all of the different syllabi that Dr. Stanley Monteith and his associates have put together, and perhaps most importantly, how you can support this radio program and all of the different places that it comes on. You know, it is expensive, and if you're learning anything from listening, don't you think that God would like to have a discussion with you as to whether or not you maybe should pay for what you're getting? I know Dr. Stan won't say that, but I will. I think it's an important thing. There are ways that you can involve yourself on a monthly basis and receive and return the four most important tapes of the month. That's an interesting thing that's found right here in this Radio Liberty resource list of what's going on. Call us. Won't you? 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Or you could write Radio Liberty at Post Office Box 969, Soquel, California. That's S-O-Q-U-E-L, Soquel, California, 95073. Radio Liberty, Post Office Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. And, of course, on the web, where you're listening right now, some of you anyway, at www.radioliberty.com. You can, in the very least, tell your friends and neighbors about that site. It's very, very easy to listen to this program, and we know that there are hundreds and thousands of you listening because we do get lots of calls during the week asking for the information that I've been talking about. Our guest today and I have been talking about what's going on in America, perhaps behind the scenes somewhat. Richard, do you think that the reason we don't know more about this white supremacy stuff is because of the fact that people have, put all of their attention on the Islamic threat? Certainly the government, NBC News, CBS News, and so forth, they all talk about Islam because that's what President Bush is talking about, the war on terror and stuff like that. So as we come back right now with all of our friends from that little short break, we'll be talking with Richard Avanes for just a minute or so, and I've asked him, why is it that we don't understand about white supremacists here in these states? What do you think, Richard?
Well, I do think that there is this fixation, this obsession with the Muslim terrorists, you know, the extreme Islam believers. Because, you know, we are, quote-unquote, at war with an Islamic country, Iraq. You know, we're in there. We're over there. We're always talking about it. But I think that's one of the dangerous things about where we're standing in this country. We're not paying attention to maybe some other terrorists we need to be looking at, and those are the white supremacists. And, you know, we tend to focus on those people, those things that are not like us. And, you know, this is primarily still a Christian country. There's not a a lot of Muslims here that many people know, and so, you know, they're different, so we focus on them.
I think it's important that you said those words, that we need to focus on what's going on. The people typically who listen to this program tend to be Christian, and I think probably the most important thing that we need to continue to talk about is the fact that we're not going to be here forever, and it's your responsibility, as you know the Lord Jesus Christ, to be a good witness for that which you know to be the truth. Would you agree to that, Richard?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the bottom line of my book, when you get through the, you know, fast-paced action thriller and the white supremacy, the underlying themes are, what do we do as Christians in this type of instance? How do we confront it? What are the values and the spiritual truths that we hold to and cling to? How are we going to change the world?
Thank you so much for being with me this afternoon. I appreciate it. On short notice, a little bit anyway, I hope that we got the word out about your book. I certainly have enjoyed talking with you, and maybe we can do it again sometime. Thanks, Richard.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
And that was Richard, and he is down there in Orange County. Surprisingly, a lot of this kind of business going on down there. When's the last time you ever heard of a white supremacist group in and around you? I always thought they were up somewhere in the mountains in the northwest here, but it's a scary thing because I can see how they could intermesh with the radical Islam here in this country. We've seen the Murrah building. Whether that was white supremacists and Islam working in cohorts, whether it was just Islam, will never be proven to our satisfaction, I'm sure. But we need to move on with this. As Christian people, we live at the pleasure of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And we're not promised a tomorrow. We're not promised a sunrise. We're not promised the next moment, actually. And if you have a passion for those who are around you, you will live that way, expecting with confidence that the Lord might take you away at any second. And wouldn't it be a shame if those who love you and those who are around you didn't understand where you're coming from? So you might want to pick up a copy of Homeland Insecurity by our guest, Richard Abanes. That's A-B-A-N-E-S. You might want to pick up any of his apologetic things to learn how you can have the confidence to witness for the Lord Jesus Christ. Maybe you haven't had that confidence up to this point in time. Maybe you need to ask your pastor to have an apologetics course. Maybe you need to have your pastor preach from the Bible more succinctly. Maybe you need to understand better what's going on in Christendom as opposed to maybe what's going on NBC or ABC. You know, it's exciting for me to be able to sit here. I want to remind you about what goes on at Radio Liberty. I'm thrilled to be here. Tomorrow I'm going to have Dr. Dennis Cuddy with me. We're going to be talking about some stuff. I'm really excited about all that. We're coming to the end of this program today. I want to leave you with the fact that you can help underwrite the cost of these programs by calling 800-544-8927 and telling the person there that maybe I'd like to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. They'll give you the complete information that you need. Until tomorrow, as the Lord tarries anyway, we're going to be back, hopefully, with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And my name is Dave Wilson, saying, think on this very carefully. Oh, God bless, oh.